So now we're going to move on to some individual questions. So the first one is for Kaya. You've spoken about previously about the intersection of climate with other issues, but if you could elaborate on that and also speak to the sort of timeline of environmental issues, because I feel like we often, when we're talking about climate change, we have a lot of huge systemic problems, such as like dependence on automobiles. That's something that is really hard to change. And it's kind of easy to think that like by the time you change it, it could be, you know, too late. Or, you know, what's the sort of, what do you see as like our timeline, or do you think we have enough time to make the changes we need to make for our planet and our climate?
So the intersection of climate and other things, and then do we have enough time?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Well, so one thing about the climate issue is it intersects with, I think, pretty much everything that we care about. So that one, it's almost too big a question to even try to address in a reasonable amount of time. But I guess in the terms of the time issue, the climate crisis is so big and so scary and just so difficult to deal with that I think a lot of us have the, even those of us who work in climate activism regularly, sometimes just kind of want to, you want to put your head under your pillow and just not even, and just kind of hide, right? It's almost so large to be overwhelming sometimes, I feel like. And I'm not saying that other issues are easy to deal with either, but I think climate does have that, you know, really larger than life sort of feeling to it. And that can lead to feelings of, I think, helplessness or hopelessness or what have you. And I mean, that's normal. That's not, don't feel bad if you feel that way sometimes. I know I've felt that way before too. But one thing that's helped me think about the climate issue and our ability to deal with it is, I guess the recognition that, so the climate system is not linear. That's one of the things that's actually scary about it, is that you can be putting more emissions up in the air for years, and then, you know, things are getting a little warmer, a little warmer, a little warmer, and then suddenly you might kind of fall off a cliff, whether it means that the circulation system in the world's oceans grinds to a halt, whether it means that a bunch of methane that was trapped under the ocean suddenly unfreezes and comes into the air, whatever. So there's these non-linearities that are one of the challenges as we move forward and we're trying to predict what's going to happen in the future. One thing that is potentially helpful, though, is that the system, when we're talking about system change, systems besides climate also sometimes are nonlinear. Social systems are nonlinear. Things don't change gradually, although we tend to expect they're going to. That's human nature, that we tend to think, oh, things have been going gradually for the last few years like this. Maybe we can turn it around and get gradual improvement or whatever. But sometimes things change really quickly. And that can be, you know, a bad thing sometimes, but it can also be a good thing. So I think in terms of human systems, I mean, we've seen some very impressive feats of human, you know, ingenuity, of engineering and working together in the past. I mean, the effort, there's various examples, but obviously to put somebody on the moon is kind of the stereotypical example. Certainly the mobilization during World War II is another example. There are other examples in history as well where things have changed very quickly. And now, at this stage in history, we have quite a lot of technological solutions out there to deal with the climate issue if we were just to get the social and political thing moving in the right direction. So I guess in terms of do we have enough time, that depends on various things. I think if we get our act together and actually start pushing in the right direction in a real way and make things happen, I'm hopeful that we will be able to preserve a livable future. It won't be the same world. It'll be a different world, a changed world. At this point, we can't stop everything, I don't think. But certainly, is there hope? Yes. And is it worth fighting for? Yes. Are we going to make it and solve the climate crisis for sure? No. That's something we have to all work on and contribute to. But I'm cautiously optimistic about that. I would like to say one other thing that I could have said in some other part, but just to kind of, as kind of this talking about, in answer to the last question, I was thinking. I mean, one issue, I mentioned money and politics is a structural issue that keeps us from getting where we want to get, you know, whether it's on climate or it's on equality or it's on other issues. There's another structural issue, it's not exactly one issue, but it's a structural category of issues, which are the isms, right, like racism and sexism and the various different things that divide us. A lot of times in my activist experience here in Madison, there's a tendency, I think, or I've noticed a tendency oftentimes to say, you know, somebody brings up, hey, you know, there's this police violence has been going on against African-American community or against other, you know, people of color, or these other structural issues there. Like, oh yeah, that's really important, but we're focused on our issue. You know, that's kind of secondary. We should, you know, learn to kind of reach out and support other struggles, but really this is the primary thing and this is the secondary. Like, it's almost separate, right? I mean, at least a lot of white activists, I feel like, will tend to talk this way sometimes. And I think that one thing that's important to realize is that these structural things are keeping all of us back. You know, sexism keeps, you know, it hurts men too. You know, racism hurts everybody. Obviously it hurts some folks more than others, for sure. But there are these when you allow yourself to be divided, you can't get collectively to where you're trying to go as well at all. And so I think it's all of our, not just responsibility, which it is, but also it's an opportunity to, you know, join together and work against some of these things that oppress parts of our community in order to all move forward together. So that's another structural thing I'd put into the same, not quite the same category as money and politics, but another thing that I think it's really important for everybody to work on making better, because then we'll all be more successful with the things of whatever your number one issue might be. I think that's, I don't want to say it's number two, but it's an important structural thing I think we should all work on, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. You took a really broad question and
made really broad.
Yeah, but you answered it well. Thank you. Danny, from a working class perspective and someone who works as a student worker, where do you see the campus community in enacting a sort of change in the system or moving towards the next system? Do you think the campus community is ready for that, or either student workers, or how do you see this movement sort of forming from a student perspective?
Yeah, I think this issue really goes back, I think, I want to say about 5 years, majorly, in recent memory at least. The Occupy Wall Street movements, obviously we all remember the Occupy Wall Street movements, like Wall Street was shut down, streets all across the United States were shut down in protest of this, of corporate greed, et cetera, et cetera. You know, fast forward a couple of years later, you have protests over the death of countless black members of the community. You see the events of Ferguson, Baltimore, the shootings in the Twin Cities in Minnesota recently, and the work that's been done here in Madison as well on the issue. And then jump a little bit forward some more, 2014, 2015, and now coming up into 2016. We've seen over 100 cities go on strike for fast food workers asking for a $15 minimum wage. I think at the center of a lot of these movements have been students, have been a lot of young people, millennials. I think that this generation is a lot of really involved and really active people in these issues. I don't know. I don't want to see if there's been an awakening or whatnot, but you know, people are using technology in a way that we've never seen before. We're seeing people use technology to educate themselves and to get involved with different issues. And I think you can really see this in college campuses and among students. UW-Madison, you know, if somebody asks me how big is the College Democrats? You know, I sometimes give them underwhelming numbers just because there are so many progressive organizations on campus. There's so many different ways to get involved. And, you know, everybody is out there to care about something. And I think that's a big way in which students are playing a central role in the next system. Students are becoming active in ways we've never seen before. It would be great if the same amount could show up to vote all the time. But, you know, we're working there. We're getting there step by step, day by day. And I think we're going to start seeing students play a larger role in all of these different movements. I think that I guess if I can keep using my Fight for 15 example, there's a national movement right now to, you know, bring that same kind of justice to student workers. And I think a lot of times it's because we're some of the people most directly impacted by these kind of issues, and most broadly affected by these kind of issues as well. I'm a campus worker. I have I make $9.80 an hour as a student supervisor. So that wasn't even my starting wage. I made $8.80 when I first started. So I've been able to get a dollar raise over my time, over my 2 years. But you know, I have to pay for rent, I have to pay for groceries, I have to pay for tuition, book rentals, if they let me rent it. A lot of times I have to buy my books. And there's so many costs to students, and you know, I add that to the marginalization of students of color, to the 27% of female students at UW-Madison who say that who have experienced sexual assault. I mean, students are right at the front lines of a lot of these issues. And I think that's how we're getting involved and how we're going to start making that change.
Thank you. And Kenneth, what do you think locally on campus do you think we need to what needs to happen in order to sort of get more students involved in both movements for like Black liberation with UW Blackout and other movements to move closer to the next system? So sort of building off what Danny's question of what students are doing now, what do you think we can do to incorporate more students and build the movement more?
Yeah, I think that there are some central things that can be done in moving to that next system here in Madison. I think kind of connecting with what Danny was saying, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a higher level of evolvement of our generation. I would say that it's kind of the latter point he was making about us being able to educate ourselves on social media and us being able to use technology to spread information and to now be able to see things in real time when they're happening, the injustices of the world. The things that have been going on didn't just start. You know, the injustices that we're learning about didn't happen yesterday. Police brutality in the Black community has gone on so long as I've been alive, and I'm sure before then. Only difference is now we have camera phones. Now somebody can pull out their phone, take a picture, take a video recording, and post it on Facebook, and it go viral in 30 minutes. And so now we see it, and now we have no choice but to come to understand that these are the realities of our society. And in that knowledge, I think, is where we start the production of working towards the next system. We have to continue to educate ourselves. We have to continue to make sure that we know all of the things that are the truths of our society that we want to change. And that starts with educating the young people, that starts with educating ourselves, educating college students, and making sure that we understand the actual issues that affect us in Madison. I think moving from that, after continuing education, we have to find those core central values that can move us to that next system, which I expressed, I believe, is strengthening democracy. That means after we've educated ourselves and we know that Scott Walker or somebody is trying to put forth something that's going to limit voting or going to put past something that's going to disenfranchise people from the democratic process, after educating people about that, we mobilize people or we find ways to vote new people into office who we know will strengthen the democratic process. And those are ways that we can go about attacking those issues. And doing that furthers our sense of equality, it furthers our sense of liberty, and it furthers our values of community and our belief in us having the stake in working with and for each other in the battle for education, you know, liberty, democracy, and all of those good things. I think that as students here in Madison, it's our job to make sure that we continue to stay active with the new resources that we have. You know, 30 years ago, there was no Facebook, you know, there was no way to share information on such a large scale level. Nowadays, you have a majority of students who aren't really watching television as much, but will go on Facebook and read about 30 articles a night. I know I'm one of those students, and I'll share as much as I can to get people involved in different perspectives and learning new things. An interesting story that I believe is the stake that we as young people have in connecting with the older generation of people. I know that maybe 5 years ago, my mother would have probably had a completely negative association with the word socialism. You know, but with Bernie Sanders and my enthusiasm for him, I've shared at least, I would say, maybe 50 articles on Bernie alone. And it surprised me and shocked me. One night, I jumped on Facebook, and I saw my mother share one of the articles that I shared. Now I know my mom's going to vote for Bernie Sanders and influence at least her peer group, if no one else, that he's the candidate for us, he's the candidate for people, whether that's black, white, lower socioeconomic status, or whatever you are. And it starts with that simple want in the value of education and the want in the value to bring people together to understand that these issues affect us all.
Great. And for our final question, for all of you, what are solutions to these problems that are happening in Madison, that are in progress right now, and how can we collaborate and strengthen both in these movements to connect these issues, and also throughout this weekend teach-in, how can we sort of connect our different issues, more of like actual actions, how we can connect all these issues together. And we can start with Kaya, because you're closest to.
Well, I guess the good news is that there are lots of things going on in Madison that people can plug into depending on where you want to put your energy. And most of you in this room probably already know that. I'm just hazarding a guess. But if you're looking for additional places to plug in, at least on the money and politics and climate stuff, I mean, 350 Madison is a good place to go for climate-related work. There are other groups around as well, but that is one I would mention. And then there's a local group called South Central Wisconsin United to Amend, which works on the money and politics issue, trying to get a constitutional amendment to undo the Citizens United decision and make clear the corporations are not people and money's not speech. So that's another group that I recommend. I'm probably biased, but yeah. In terms of this weekend, I mean, I guess I don't know exactly how everything's going to shake out, but I found, at least in my own life, that one of the most valuable, well, there's two things that are really valuable about places where different folks come together in teach-ins or in similar sorts of situations. One is the learning, which is, I mean, teach-in, learning, you kind of, you know, you'd expect that. Really listening, especially listening to folks that you may not, you know, may not be the folks that you usually hear. Maybe they work on a different issue or they come from a different background or whatever, but really trying to listen and understanding somebody else's point of view, and that can really help you build your own ability to affect change because you understand existing realities better. And the second really big thing, honestly, is just that connection piece again. Those personal relationships are one of the most important things, whether it's in the business world or it's in the activism world, who you know and the degree to which you know them well enough to pick up the phone and call them when you need them, you know, or hey, you know, I've got this campaign going on or I've got this thing that I could really, you know, use your help. Having that personal connection is so, so helpful. It's so much better than saying, oh, well, I wish I knew somebody in the, you know, climate movement, but I don't know. So I'll try to like kind of find some way to make a bridge. Like if you actually know somebody, you could just be like, hey, you know, can you help me out with this? So I would say just building those connections and networking, that sort of thing, is one of the most valuable parts of any kind of coming together, convergence sort of a situation, which I think this is. So that would be my sense of it anyway.
Yeah.
Kenneth? Yeah, I would say some of the solutions that can be kind of continued and fostered this weekend as the teaching continues is just kind of education still. You know, I would stay with this theme of education because I believe that a lot of what people don't know is one of the central inhibitors of people taking action. And, you know, a lot of people in higher up positions have a stake in people not knowing. So we have to continue to educate ourselves and continue to get the word out. One thing that I know is going on tomorrow is the March for Tony Robinson. If people don't know about it, then people won't be there. Another thing that's going on March 10th is the blackout of the Board of Regents meeting, who has a lot of institutional power in governing UW as we try to make this place a better place for all people as well. If people don't know about it, then people won't be there. And, you know, just the holistic idea of letting people know that there are ways you can get involved and there are ways you can educate yourself. These are the specific organizations that, you know, you could get involved in. That's a good educational piece. These are the specific issues that may potentially affect you. It's another good educational piece. this is how all of these specific issues correlate, which means that all of them affect you. It's another great educational piece because it starts off with personal investment, especially as we live in a society where we feel we have to be personally invested in order to get involved. And people don't really know that everything that goes on, they should have a personal investment in, because it all connects and it all matters towards the greater goal of humanity and equality. So I think those are some things that can be talked about here at the teach-in, and just, you know, a continued raising consciousness about the issues that we care about and about the programs through which we can involve ourselves to kind of affect change in those issues.
And I think just building off of that, you know, once you're educated on something, once you learn about what's going on in your surroundings and whatnot, it's just put yourself out there. Go, volunteer, participate, be amongst fellow activists, be amongst fellow allies, be amongst fellow marginalized groups. Just put yourself out there and participate. You know, I've always lived by the credo of being over-involved. I think since like second grade on, I think if my mom didn't put me in a bunch of activities and whatnot after school, I put myself into it. You know, I've never known a time in my life where I wasn't busy with something, and you know that's not only the way to stay happy in your life. It's the way to affect change in your community. You know, Kenneth said tomorrow there's a march for Tony Robinson happening on campus. The day after there's going to be one on Williamson Street. You know, next week I'm going to be picketing outside dining halls, asking for a $15 minimum wage for campus workers because we deserve it. There's just so many ways to get involved, and I can never stress how important it is to put yourself out there and be a part of that change. You know, I think a lot of times people feel very intimidated, and they don't feel comfortable going into those spaces. And I respect that, but I cannot urge people enough to put themselves out there, make the friends in those kind of communities. And I think those exact kind of ideas and that exact kind of mentality is a way to go into this this weekend as well. Put yourself out there. Put yourself into go to the breakouts that you know nothing about. Go and learn something. Like Kenneth said, it's just learn, educate yourself. And that way you can be a part of that change. You're not sitting by the sidelines going, wow, isn't that cool? Look what they're doing. You can be a part of that. And how cool is that? That you can say, I was a part of that. Like years down the road, you can look back and say, I was there for that. And you know, I think that's one of the most magical things that we can do in this world is that we can be a part of change. So, I think that's
great. With that, we're going to open it up to Q&A from the audience. People have questions about our panelists, their lives or lived experiences, any other questions you may have for them, feel free. Do we have questions?
I do kind of see how well I do at framing this. Well, one thing as a student myself, it's, you know, you all talked about this, you know, interconnectedness and how everything, you know, that is going on really is interconnected, and we need to build, again, this sense of community and recognize that all the issues that we are dealing with really are connected. But then again, of course, we all obviously have our own paths that we're following. Again, you all mentioned what you're studying. Obviously, I'm studying religion. You know, we have to spend this time dedicating ourselves to our individual efforts. But then also, you know, we want to have this community. And so it's like, how do you find time to, like, think about, like, okay, this is the internship I'm going to get, this is the job I'm going to get eventually, but then also be like, wait, but like, what I actually care about is this other stuff. And so, like, balancing, I guess you could say, what the system that we currently have is, like, wanting us to do and wanting us to keep working with, and versus what we know we want, I guess. Yeah. So, well, how do you do that?
Anyone wants to start, feel free.
Yeah, there's a couple ways I think about the interconnectedness of everything. Of course, everything is interconnected. The struggle of the marginalized is one that is based on selfish gain of the elite and the marginalization, deprivation of education, deprivation of rights, democracy, and all of that, of the undermined. But one thing that we do have to consider is that even though there's this big, huge idea of inequality, and you could take that with every single instance of inequality that we're connecting, you could say that racism is this huge idea of inequality that we want to, you know, stop. But can we really just say, all right, let's all gather and meet and organize, and all right, this is the plan, we're going to stop racism? Probably not. But what you can do in that is you can say, okay, legal segregation exists. We need to find a way to tackle that. That was done by our ancestors. You can say, standardized testing does not necessarily predict student success in the future, but it does stop students from lower income statuses and different racial statuses from applying to universities and attending those universities, even if they did apply and take the standardized test. You can say, oh, we need to make our institutions aware of how this inhibits education for marginalized people. And those are ways that you can go about them individually without thinking about the holistic connection, but still knowing that that connection exists. And in our personal lives, while we're combating, trying to, you know, get ourselves through this system that we're fighting against, you know, with whatever that be, or trying to attain a job because you have to eat, and just trying to live as a person, I think it's important to keep those goals and that mentality in your mind with whatever you're doing. A person can be a journalist and say, you know what, I only want to do stories that help marginalized people. I only want to talk about the ways in which Scott Walker is inhibiting democracy. I only want to, you know, and we can take that into our different places or fields that we live in throughout whatever we do. And in addition to that, we can try to carve out our own lanes, because there are ways we can, you know, actually exist sustainably even in our activism and even in what we're doing. And it's just a matter of trying to figure that out, and that's the reason why we're calling it Next System, because it's not necessarily only included in the box of what we have as a system. While that system is hard to navigate through, when you're trying to, you know, make change and be an agent of difference, we still have to consider it a part of our fight as we go throughout, even in the system, because causing change within the system is just as much of importance as causing change outside of the system to change the system. If you can get as many people in whatever you're doing to agree and to get on board with you, then you might have enough people to say, oh, let's step outside of that and see what we can do to change that entirely.
Yeah, so I totally respect the idea that time is limited in one's life. I work probably about, on average, 10 to 12 hours a week. I intern about the same amount, interning for free, by the way. Going to class on top of that. Luckily, I'm only taking 10 credits this semester. I'm giving myself a break because it's my last semester. Or normally it's 16 credits. And on top of that, you have your organizations you're a part of. You have like conference calls if you're a part of those. You have all of these things all around you. And then on top of that, you have to find time to try to make meals for yourself. And like, you know, if you want to be health conscious, you want to try to go and work out. So there's so much that goes into the life of a student. I totally understand entirely. And part of me is going to be happy that when May rolls around, by the way. But, you know, I've struggled with this for so long, and I've really started to try to think about it more, about how I make time for all of these different things in my life, it's really easy for me to put myself on this path, I care a lot about, obviously, LGBTQ rights. I care a lot about working class rights. But, you know, I always want to make room for those other types of struggles in my life as well, and helping out anybody I can in any of those other actions that are going on and whatnot. I think that, like, from a very practical standpoint, making that time is just a matter of, you know, I could spend a little bit of time watching Netflix, or I could go have some fun with my friends marching in the streets tomorrow night of Madison. And I don't have to go work out tomorrow night because I'm going to be marching. It's going to be a lot of walking right there. I guess that depends on how much you work out or how... it's a lot of working out for me. I'll just say that. So, you know, it's not looking at these things as as extra burdens in your life or extra activities that you could be trying to do. You know, you're looking at them as recreation and fun and activity and community, because that's what they all are. I mean, I'm gonna be like more than proud to be there in solidarity with the Blackout Movement tomorrow night. That doesn't mean I'm, and just because I'm involved with them, it doesn't mean I need to get up there and speak with them or anything like that. No, I know what my place is in each movement, in each fight. I might be more active and take more of a leadership role in the work in the working class movement on campus and the LGBTQ movement on campus. But you know, that doesn't exclude me from being a member and being being an activist, even in like a small sense, in all of those other struggles that are going on as well.
Try to respond as well. I was smiling as you're asking the question because this is the perennial balance in your life question, and I was smiling mostly just because I don't know about you two, but for me the idea that I'm like sitting up here, there's sort of this expectation that you're somehow an expert on something or at least have something valuable to say. And as you were saying that, I was like, well, this is kind of comical because this is something I've struggled with a lot over time, and I think everybody does, although maybe some of us more than others. But it is tricky. To have that balance, and I guess just personally, I think I've learned a few things over the years through doing that balance thing really badly sometimes. I guess this, earlier I think I was talking a little bit about society and the individual collective balance and how it shouldn't be all collective or all individual. In my view, it should be some balance. It's the same thing in your individual life, or my individual life. I shouldn't talk about yours, I'll talk about mine. I at least try to take care of both my own space and making sure I have that, as well as putting time into those other issues and causes that I care strongly about. And on the one side, if it gets too far to whack one direction and I'm not doing enough activism, I actually feel like my individual self gets hurt from that, because I do need, at least, you know, people are different, but I do need that connection and that feeling of involvement and purpose, and like I'm actually am doing something to contribute to a greater goal. So there's that. But then if I go too far the collective direction and I let the individual stuff slide, maybe I'm not eating well or I'm not working out or I'm not, you know, taking that time for myself, that also ends up suffering. The collective work suffers then. Because at that point, I'm not taking care of myself as an individual, and I end up not being very good as a collective worker, because you get bitter, you get like, you know, tired, you can't focus, you get sick, whatever it is. And that's not good energy to kind of be working with the people in. So there is this balance. And I think that it's important to, you know, work towards at least getting a good balance, whatever that means for you. And we can also help each other out a bit with this. I'm not saying that it's, you know, entirely somebody else's responsibility to make sure that, you know, you have balance, but insofar as we can keep an eye out and notice that, you know, sometimes you'll have that if you're in an organization, say, and perhaps you're in some kind of leadership role, or you've just been with the organization a while, and you have some oftentimes a newer activist join, and they're just like full of energy, and they're really talented and really have great skills, and they're just putting so much time into, you know, your organization. Maybe they're doing your communications and they're just doing great. A lot of times there's a tendency to take as much as you can get from that person until they just burn out. And that's bad for the organization, obviously, if you let them burn out, because then they stop doing what they were doing. It's also bad for them, of course, because that's not good to burn out in general. And so there's an interest, I think, that we all have in trying to take care of each other and intervene as much as we can anyway before that happens. And it's not easy always to do that, but insofar as we can keep an eye on each other, you know, try to support each other, if somebody seems like they're working more time than is sustainable, to, you know, try to do a bit of an intervention respectfully, like, hey, you know, are you feeling okay with the amount of work, are you managing, makes time for other things in your life that are important. I guess one other thing is that insofar as some of us have, you know, it's definitely the case that not everybody has the privilege of doing this, but insofar as you can align your personal goals and the collective goals, that also helps. Like after a number of years of not getting my dissertation done, I finally decided that I probably had to make my dissertation kind of a borderline activist theme, like something that actually did potentially contribute to the climate and other goals that I care about, if I ever was going to have a hope of actually getting the thing done. So that's what I did. I redesigned the theme and the topic, and now I'm working towards something that actually does touch on climate and communication and things I care about otherwise. So that's also another thing that can be useful. If you are able to do that, do it. Obviously not all of us have that that privilege, that luxury of being able to do that, but if you can, that can help too.
Yeah, and I would just add to that from my own experience, it's, I think, as what everyone has been saying, it's all about balance in your life, and as a student who's like both pre-med and also the head of like College Democrats on campus, it's really hard to do both my like schoolwork and then political work and other things. But I think just appreciating the satisfaction I get from both and allocating time for both makes me happier as an individual, and that is what's important. And I think if you, like Kenneth said, if you can incorporate it into your career path, if you can find a way to do, like intersect your career with whatever movements you care about, that is, you know, that's the goal. But if you can't do that, then, you know, take time, take your weekends, volunteer in whatever thing you want to do, help out on a campaign, or, you know, it's like, even if, I know that even in the future, if I'm not doing anything that has to do with politics, I know I'm still going to like help on in whatever campaign I can, because that's the thing I like doing. So I think just finding balance and helping out whenever you can, because you can't do it all. People get burned out, and you know, you have to do what's right for you. But yeah, balance is key. You have a question?
Yeah. So you guys had a really fantastic conversation about the issues you're working on and ways to connect the movement. But I guess I sort of want to change gears a little bit and talk about something that you guys already have in common, which is that you're all organizers. And so my question is, as organizers, what's one specific type of training, one specific tool, or one specific resource that you guys wish you had access to that you think would make your organization or your movement more effective? And when you're answering that question, can you wrap it into like how you think change happens? So if you're in an organization that's trying to build power, how will that training or resource or tool help you build power? If you're in an organization that's more focused on individual transformation, how does that resource or tool help you achieve that individual transformation?
Sorry, just feeling inspired.
Sure, I guess I'll go. You know, I really wish, coming into this perspective, you know, we all are as students / organizers, is time. That's the number one thing right there. And I, you know, there's just never enough of it, obviously. And, you know, time is how things get done. And, you know, you need time to plan. You need time to make calls in order to get people out to do stuff. You need time to go and get the items you need for whatever action you're doing. You need time, etc. The list goes on. So, you know, it's a pretty vague idea of what a tool is that I would need, but, you know, I honestly just wish I wasn't a student. part of me, at least. Obviously, I need my degree and I need to find a job, but I wish I could just dedicate more of my time to doing what I love and doing this. Because, you know, I'll literally be sitting in all of my classes and I'll just be like writing an escalation plan for what we're working on, or I'll be, you know, sending emails to people. And, you know, I'm a bad student, I'll be honest. but I just, you know, time is so important in a campaign. There's just so much that goes on behind the scenes. There's just never enough of it. And, you know, on top of that, you know, maybe this is something that the fellow panelists can help me out with. It's just people power. That's a big tool, and you know, it's a rare commodity for students. A lot of people, it's a lot of no, sorry, can't, schoolwork, no, sorry, I have work, no, sorry, this or that, and it's totally understandable because I understand the struggle. I'm a part of it every day, but I you know, it's just you just. Every day you wish, I wish I could bring more students in. I wish I could have more people working with me on this. So I don't know, maybe one of y'all can enlighten me on how to effectively bring more people in. It's just, you know, time and people power, the two most key things to any campaign. It's not money. We've been running this student worker campaign with practically zero funds. You know, like a couple dollars here, a couple dollars there to get some like posters and some markers, but you know, it's people and time. The time that goes into the planning, the time that goes into and the people showing up to get stuff done. Those are the two key things.
Yeah, time and people power are huge components of like what would help any type of social movement, campaign, or activist organizing, just in general. Just to kind of like, I guess, help my fellow organizer here. One thing we did, we stay involved on social media, and we try to get the word out as much as we can. So we've had about maybe 40 people sign up as volunteers. So the biggest thing for us right now is finding ways to actually set up those roles and delegate those tasks, because it's like, when you like start doing this stuff, it's like you're not like a CEO or like a business manager who can set up like employee roles and all types of things like that. But you have to learn how to delegate those things after you get the capacity of those people who are willing to work. So to your request for people power, I would say get involved on social media, show people what you're doing, make sure you're active every day. I know we try to make a couple posts every day about what we're doing, what we want to do, and how you can get involved. But right now, if we had one resource, it would be how to actually start defining those roles for people to help out. Because I know exactly what I'd like to get done, and I know exactly the way I'd like to get it done. And I can do it in so much as I don't sleep at night. But it would be much easier for me to be able to align that with the people who want to get involved and assign that to them, rather. And so that's what I would say would be like one of the biggest resources. Funding can help in certain ways. I believe, I'm trying to think, I know we've had things in the past that we've wanted to fund or whatever, but I can't recall right now. I would say kind of like what was said before, is that it's not really about money, it's about that time and that people power. And then for me specifically, how to actually delegate those tasks, because there are things that we want to make sure get done. And of course, people, you know, with their own requirements and commitments, there's different levels of involvement and investment that people are willing to have. So trying to be able to gauge that and get more people involved in the best way we can, suited for them.
Yeah, definitely time and people power, I'll agree with that. But in terms of specific tools or things that I think are valuable, it's hard to see in a particular organization now. The specific examples I'm thinking of actually involve things like money and legal expertise and things like that that are specific to certain situations, so I'm not gonna bore you with those details. But I would say that ways to come up with more creative ways of doing things can help with that time and people power and in general organizing. For instance, a lot of times when somebody's planning an event to maybe commemorate an occasion, there's a knee-jerk reaction to say, oh, let's have a march and rally. Which, I mean, there's a place for a march and rally, that's fine, you know, that can be a good thing to do. But sometimes it's kind of like you're inwardly grown a little, like, oh my goodness, if I have to go to Omar march and rally. You know, so sometimes there's a better way of doing that. Maybe you can do some street theater. Or maybe you can come up with some other creative thing, or have like.
You just gave me an opening to plug scenes.
Oh, okay. let's see what.
Sorry.
That's okay. I'm a big fan of doing things like brainstorming, sometimes over maybe a beer or something, depending on if you're a legal age to drink, or if you're into that. But getting some people together and having an informal sort of occasion to come together, maybe a retreat for your organization for that matter, but something that lets you think outside the box a bit and come up with novel solutions to the things you're trying to do anyway, which very well might be like recruiting, it might be doing events, maybe doing solving other types of problems. So creativity, I'm a big fan of trying to, you know, figure out ways to inspire that. The other thing that I think is useful is that there are a lot of skills out there that, so depending on what you're trying to do, obviously you need certain skills to do it. Social media is a good example. There are, you know, specific skills that go into knowing how to actually do that effectively. There are skills I don't really have that much, but you know, I'm really thankful for those of us who do. But if you're in your organization, maybe you're trying to get better at social media, guess what? There's a bunch of other organizations out there that may very well be doing this work, and they may have those skills and that expertise. Maybe they'll think about reaching out and getting together a group of folks to, you know, have a little social media, I don't know, not a club, but my boyfriend has actually done this with social media folks in Milwaukee, to, you know, have a kind of a coming together of like minds, invite folks in different organizations, have a, you know, weekend together or at least a day or something, and build those bridges, maybe teach each other, you know, what you know, and that can strengthen everybody's efforts. And that can be the same thing with working with traditional media, doing, you know, organizing, doing other things. So ways of kind of more efficiently spreading around the skills that we do have, I think, is one thing that's, in general, useful, in my view.
Great. And we just have time for one last question.
Yeah, one quick question, a longer one. What time is the march tomorrow that you mentioned? Where is it going?
Yeah, it's at 4 p.m. at the Student Activity Center. So we'll be starting like around that Student Activity Center, East Campus kind of area.
And then there's another march besides. So this one that's happening tomorrow is on, so like Kenneth said, starting at East Campus Mall, and it's going to be a lot of student groups and other community groups. Then there's also another one on Sunday, which is the Sunday the 6th, which will be at 3 p.m. Starting at the Social Justice Center, which is on Billy Street. And that Sunday is the actual anniversary of Tony Robinson's murder. So my
other question has to do with, there was an amazing Democratic with a small D uprising almost 5 years ago here in Madison, which originally was based on Walker trying to shut down public workers' unions, and it evolved into an amazing experience, particularly those of us under the dome when people spoke out every night. So what happened with that, and I'm from Chicago, so I don't know as many details as people in this room, but I was up here for a couple weeks during that, is then most of the energy was funneled into the campaign for governor to defeat Walker, which failed. We may be coming to sort of a similar moment a little differently now. It's possible Sanders could win the Democratic convention, but it's just looking by numbers less and less likely. He hasn't changed his mind, at least publicly, that he's going to support Hillary Clinton if she's the nominee. And I'd really like to hear, you know, the three of yours' opinion about the fact that millions of people have, you know, supported Sanders and what he says he stands for. And what else do you think we could do beside elect Hillary Clinton or whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be besides Sanders?
So you're asking, like, what can we do?
In other words, do you think that all these millions of people, including yourself, who support Sanders, if he loses the nomination to Hillary Clinton, what do you think we should all do? Besides, you know, some people could say, well, I'll support Hillary Clinton. There's indications that millions of people may not vote. You know, do you think that Sanders should continue his candidacy as a third party candidate? You know, there's a lot of different things, but my point is that there was a real movement here that had the support of people all over the world, from Tahrir Square to everywhere else. And all that energy was funneled in one direction primarily, including by the union leaders of AFSCME, AFT, and other groups. So the question is, do you think anything differently could happen now with Sanders?
Yeah, so the perspective I take on it is, you know, if Bernie were not to get the nomination, and well, first thing I would say is, as a leader of the movement for his candidacy and for what he stands for, it would be imperative for the people following his movement to heed whatever his direction is as far as that's concerned. If Bernie says, I'm not running as a third party, we need to vote for Hillary, then I think everybody needs to vote for Hillary. But then as a people who have been inspired by the political revolution that Bernie is bringing about, it's our job then to continue that political action and that social mobilization to continue to challenge Hillary on the beliefs that we believe in that have been set out by Bernie. It's not a matter of, being against Hillary, but it's a matter of charging all of our politicians and the people who represent us with what we believe the ideas that represent us are. So when we saw the Black Lives Matter campaign go to Bernie Sanders and challenge Bernie Sanders, even though it was a little bit out of place, and Bernie Sanders has always been at the forefront of the fight for colored people in the United States, what Bernie Sanders did was he took a step back and he said, you know what, I'm going to listen, because any challenge of any Democratic ideal that needs to be heard by any candidate also needs to be heard by me. And we need to make that same type of transparency there with Hillary, with whatever it is that the candidates who vote for her will do. The citizens who vote for her will do. So we need to attack her with the same principles that we would believe Bernie Sanders would want us to with this new astounding political revolution.
Take a stab at it. You should go first.
Okay. Well, so I guess two parts. So I would agree, although there may be some Hillary supporters out here, or even, I doubt there's any Trump supporters, but if there are, I'm happy you're here. So I don't know. I mean, I personally definitely support Bernie, but I respect those who don't, I guess. So I think that trying to move together and realize that, you know, if Bernie doesn't win the nomination, that we do need to find the best path forward together, whatever that may mean, is important. I admit to really not liking Hillary. Will I hold my nose and vote for her? Yes, I will if I have to, but that's me. I guess back to the uprising. I mean, I was one of obviously very many people involved there from organizing the Valentine's Day event at the beginning, even though I couldn't be there that day because I was in Michigan. But I was involved in organizing that with the TAA, and I was there through almost the whole occupation, and I was in some of those union meetings as well. So I guess I would say that I know that there is a widespread perception that the kind of union leadership diverted energy to the recall. I'm not sure if that's exactly what you're saying, but I've heard that said before.
Not all of the union leadership, but the biggest ones.
Yeah.
AFT.
Well, yeah, and that's my union. I guess I would say, at least from my perspective, I mean, I was in kind of a different perspective or a different place maybe during that process, in that I was kind of with the Capitol community and in the Capitol a lot with that group, but then also going to a bunch of the meetings with the kind of union leadership that were being held near the Capitol, but not in usually. And my sense of that was that I don't think that the union leaders were in charge for the most part of that process. The recall was going to happen anyway, one way or another. There were people already starting to threaten to gather signatures on their own, just if the establishment didn't come along, that was going to happen. So I think to a large degree they were following more than leading with that. And you know, not that there was a resistance by the establishment doing that, but I think that it was a little more messy than perhaps the perception would indicate. And in terms of the dissipation of energy after that, I mean, certainly I think that there's some of that, and part of it is just that a lot of us were really, really tired after, you know, occupying the Capitol for weeks and doing everything else around there, that a lot of people did feel the need to step back for a while and take a break. But the number of activists, the people who had never been involved in political activism before, a lot of young people, but a lot of older folks as well, a lot of those people, even though, you know, they didn't keep working on the recall, obviously, after that was done, they did filter out and start new organizations and join existing ones and do other really good things. So I think that the, on the whole, the uprising really provided some new leadership and new direction to at least local activism, and I think that's having ripple effects and it will continue to do so. So I wouldn't consider that. It's kind of like the Occupy, too. Occupy is one thing that people say, oh, well, it failed and it went away. No, it didn't. You know, it was there, and that as Occupy, it stopped being there after a while, but those people are still very active in other areas. So in terms of Bernie, I don't have a magic answer for that one, but I do think that Bernie has changed the national conversation more than I ever expected he would. I think he's been extremely successful at that. He's pushed Hillary to the left. He's opened up things that we can, you know, talk about in the public discourse now that were not there before, despite the resistance of much of the mass media and the establishment to talking about them. We're talking about inequality, we're talking about climate, we're talking about other things, racial issues in a lot more of a substantive way than I think we would have if he wasn't running. And I think that we owe certainly some gratitude to him for that, but we also owe it to not just him, but all of each other to, as Kenneth was saying, you know, push forward with that. Whatever happens with the nomination, if it's Bernie, that's great. If not, we do the best we can. We keep everybody's feet to the fire. We keep our elected officials' feet to the fire. And we continue pushing the conversation in the direction it needs to go. I think that's the important thing. So Bernie is more of a movement, I feel like, almost than, I mean, he's an individual, but the reason he's so powerful, as powerful a force as he has become, is not because of so much him as an individual, as much as he's speaking to something that a lot of us share, and he's gotten a lot of people, you know, energized and moving in the same direction. We can keep that going, you know, even if he's not the nominee.
Can I say one really fast thing? With regard to the Wisconsin uprising energy, there are still people singing every weekday at noon in the Capitol Rotunda. You can drop in and join every weekday. It will be on March 11th, it will be 5 years. and they have not missed a weekday. It's the longest running musical protest in American history, and anybody can drop in.
And they're really nice people.
Last year.
Yeah, go sing, it's fun.
We need to do a better job of getting the word out about that on campus, because...
And even if you can't carry a tune, it's, you can still go and kind of just like blend into the voices. Like,
right.
I'm a terrible singer, but...
You don't have to make a commitment to go every day. Pick one day a week, one day a month, whatever that works for you. And please, come on up and sing with us.
So I guess to address this issue, I'll start with the uprising as well. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there physically. My mom didn't want to drive me up from my hometown. I was in solidarity from Burlington, Wisconsin. And I think that's the really key word there is solidarity, because, you know, it wasn't just AFSCME there. It wasn't just the AFT. It wasn't just the unions that were going to be directly affected by this. There were so many people who weren't going to be directly affected by Act 10 up there to join in unity with the workers that would be affected. I'm a part of the Teamsters Local 200 union. That's the Milwaukee local. And you know, Teamsters were up there every single day. Every single day, right along with AFSCME, right along with AFT, right along with all the people that were being directly affected by Act 10. And you know, I think that's a large part of this, is the unity and the idea that we all need to stand together against oppressive forces like Governor Walker, or I guess transitioning, or like people like Donald Trump. You know, I'm when April 5th rolls around, I am probably going to vote for Bernie Sanders. But you know, when the summer rolls around and convention comes, and if he unfortunately is not able to obtain the national nomination of the Democratic Party, you know, I think we need to come in with that same exact mentality. We need to look at this as an idea of unity against oppressive forces, and listening to what Donald Trump has been saying throughout the presidential cycle. You know, it's not only scary. I can't even say it's scary, because you know, a lot of people would say that, you know, racist America is finally showing its true colors, and you know, That's a scary thought. It really is, though. And I'm not going to be directly affected by the policies of Donald Trump, but I'm going to stand in solidarity against him because of all of my brothers and sisters who will be affected by his policies that he wants to enact. I have a roommate who's a Muslim American. His family's from Pakistan. Every single time he comes back from Pakistan, he has to get put in a room with people who look exactly like him. If that's how America is now under Barack Obama, I cannot imagine what America would look like under Donald Trump. He lays out his policies for us, but you know, it could only get worse from there. And you know, that frightens me on a number of levels, and I think we need to go in to the election with that kind of mentality. We're standing in solidarity against oppressive forces. And you know, if that means we have to vote for Hillary Clinton, who might not represent our views in the most accurate of senses, I think so be it. Especially like I said, if Bernie Sanders asks us to give our support to Secretary Clinton, you know, I think we as Americans owe that to the person that we've been rallying around, and we owe that to our brothers and sisters who will be deeply, deeply affected in the worst of ways if people like Donald Trump were to get elected.
I think just lastly, before Cassie takes over, I would urge people to be careful with their vote in any way, and to not look at elections as single issue processes, because there are multiple issues involved. If your issue isn't specifically represented in the way you want, think about other issues and how those could be affected in the outcome of elections every time you vote. And thank you all. A last round of applause for our...
All right. Thank you all so much. I recognize that we are a little over time, so I'm going to try to wrap this up quickly. Something that I